It's 88.5 KCSN. I'm Sky Daniels, and excited to have Trixie Whitley here with us. Welcome, Trixie.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks so much.
It really, you know, as you were playing that last song, I thought about how it's easy for people like myself in radio or any media, really. You know, when we get excited about an artist, when we quote, see something there, you know, sometimes we're prone to hyperbole. It's one thing to do that when the artist isn't sitting right there with you, but when they are sitting with you, sometimes it makes them a little uncomfortable, so we'll avoid that part of it. Suffice to say, the station was big fans of Black Dub, and that was something that clearly was a big breakthrough, and we'll talk about that. And then I saw you last year. You performed at the AAA convention in Boulder.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just wowed by the songs. I mean, really just blown away. And I actually tried to steal the board tape.
Oh.
I mean, literally, I tried to steal the board tape because at the time, you know, and part of what we'll talk about today is, you know, all this stuff you go through in making a record and labels here, labels there, A&R people there, all that stuff. But let's talk about the album. Fourth Corner's the name. Dove Man produced it, a.k.a. Thomas Barrett.
Bartlett, yeah.
And it was, it's a record that you are relatively young, but it's been a long time coming now. Let's give some of the audience who doesn't really know about you some backstory. You were originally born in Belgium, right?
Yeah, I moved to New York when I was like 8 months old. So I was born in Europe, but moved to New York.
And you moved a lot.
Yeah, I did. I definitely like grew up living a very nomadic life. You know, I was kind of born and raised in a nomadic family as well, filled with artists and musicians. Not only my dad, but on both sides of the family, they were mainly, just artists and musicians. So that's kind of how I grew up.
Just so the 9 to 5, you know, you live here and you go a few blocks and work there. That's not been part of your upbringing.
Nah, I kind of have no reference to it. Like it's wild, you know. Like I said, on both sides of my family, it's great in some ways and it's alienating in a lot of other ways as well. You know, just because you realize, you know, I think it definitely. I'm really grateful for my upbringing, how it. I realize it shaped me so much musically. You know, a lot of my musical kind of identity is really shaped by my upbringing. Got no pages no pages unspoken, but a thousand dreams within. Within they softly burn as the shock came. Rise to the level of our defeat. The hour turns dull when knowing the shade of our speed. But it's carved in stone. I was born to listen to the oldest voices. But when the world turns silent and is filled with things, this be no wilderness. I'll turn to the song of 100 candlelights. Oh, the joyful for all that shines. For all that shines.
Your first record that you made independently, and it would be foisted upon or push it into the hands of Daniel Lanois, that it was like, here, would you listen to this? It was kind of like a pretty much quick encounter in which you said, here,
man,
would you mind?
Yeah.
How's that? Tell us the real story behind
it's
that.
Weird. No, that pretty much is, I mean, it's funny again, because I'm like, I'm actually quite introverted when it comes to, like, I'm like horrible at, like, you know, like
self-promotion
and
stuff.
Man, I'm so, like, I mean, just in terms of, and definitely, like, in this, like, physical matter of, like, hey, but the this is the really crazy thing. All right, so about Daniel was that, you know, my dad was a musician.
Sure.
And which I'm sure everyone knows here. Right. and has his records and stuff. And so when my parents were still together, we lived in New Orleans. My dad's first record was recorded in Daniel's studio. Daniel Lanois never worked with my dad. That's also kind of a misinterpretation.
Right.
So they never worked together, but his first record was recorded in his studio with a different producer named Malcolm Byrne. And so when I was about 3 years old, that's when my dad was making his first record. And my mom and I were living at the house in New Orleans. But then, you know, we never saw Daniel back again after that. And then when I first started writing my own songs, it was probably around the age of like 14, 15. The only instrument I played at that time was drums. So I didn't play a melodic instrument yet. And the first songs I started writing, ironically enough, were to these like instrumentals of Daniel Lanois's records and Brian Eno's like ambient records.
Right.
Like I would write these songs to these instrumental tracks of theirs. And one of my first demos at that same, you know, around that same age, had this Daniel Lanois instrumental with like me like singing my lyrics over it. And you know, which is kind of bizarre. But so then a few years later, I basically, yeah, recorded this EP, my first EP when I was when I was like 19 or 20, went with one of my musical heroes, Michelle Indigiocello.
Mm.
And so it is true, you know, like I was a huge fan of Brian Blade, you
right.
know, coming from a drummer's background as well, and obviously from Daniel. So all that time, since that period, you know, you know, I obviously don't remember seeing him anymore when I was 3 years old, but that whole time, you know, I was just absorbing his music in, you know, like the next like 18 years following. And then finally when I was 20, it is true, you know, I was visiting my mother in Belgium, and he happened to be playing a duo show with Brian Blade. And I just flipped out and I was like, okay, I have to go see this, you know, like, and it is true. Like, my mom was kind of like, well, you know, like, maybe, you know, like, maybe he would, like, recognize us or something, you know, so it is true. With her encouragement, we did manage to go and see him, and funny enough, he recognized us right away. He was like, Trixie and Elaine. My mom's name is Elaine. And, you know, and I was really shy because, like, Sinead O'Connor was sitting there at the same time, and, like, they were, like,
oh, boy. Brands,
you know, and I was just like, oh, what am I doing here? But, you know, I just gave him a little CD. And then at that time, I was waitressing at a diner in New York. And
now that's something that an 18-year-old in New York can relate to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I did that for a long time, too. I waitressed for, like, really, it's only, I mean, yeah. Like 6 years. So I went back to New York, went back to my waitressing gig, you know, didn't like, no way thought I would ever get, you know, and then like 3 months later, I got this call from Daniel saying like, hey, you know, I listened to your EP and, you know, I have this, I've been having this dream for years of starting a band that, has a lot of choral singing, and I kind of started a lot of recordings 15 years ago with Brian Blade and Daryl Johnson in Mexico, and so I've been working on these like tracks, but I've never found the kind of, you know, the real I've never found the real voice for these tracks, and then he was like, you know, I'm gonna be in Boston next week, it's close by. Because he lives in Toronto and actually LA, which is even, you know.
Even farther.
Yeah. So he's like, you know, I'll be in Boston. Would you be into maybe, you know, stopping by and maybe just like talking a bit and maybe seeing, maybe just trying some stuff out because I'll be there for three days. And at that time I like flipped out. It was so crazy. I had just written this tune called I'd Rather Go Blind, like. And so I went to Boston, met up with him, and met with Brian for the first time. And there's this little YouTube video that's, you know, has been going around. And it's literally that film is the very first time, you know, I played a few tunes for Daniel, and he was like, that tune. He's like, would you mind doing this with Brian? Like, it all happened really fast, like all in one day, you know. And we just went in. Brian had never heard the song before. And, you know, just sat down. It's really funny. Like, literally anyone that will, like, go to YouTube and look up the video, I mean, it's just crazy, the story behind it, you know, because it looks so kind of nonchalant. But it was really that was the starting point of Black Dub. Like, that was the seed that was planted, you know. Like, and from then on, you know, so Brian and I just sat down. We played the song. They filmed it. And it just went so well that literally, like, you know, then Dan that night, he asked me, he was like, you know, could you stick around for an extra day? Like, I want to, you know, try some other things out. And then I sat in during his set and just kind of came up and just sang some stuff. And he was like, you know, and then went back to New York, went back to my waitressing. And then I got a call like 2 days later, like, can you come to Toronto? In 2 days, I want to play you this track called I Believe in You. Went to Toronto, he put on this track, and I like heard it, and I was like, holy, I was like, yeah, this is totally up my aisle, you know, like, yeah, I'll give it a shot, you know, and then just laid down one take, and from then on, Dan was like, all right, I want to start this band called Black Dub.
Faithfulness never tasted the same. wicked foolishness doesn't run through our veins, but this is my gradual return. Ooh, this is my gradual return. Woke up in the night from a lightning's voices, as if a guest of beauty's, beauty's mistress. I listen to the sound of the old town stones, Ellie's story soaking in a young one's bones. Never tasted the same, and forgetfulness doesn't run through our veins, but this is my gradual return. This is my gradual return. This is my gradual return. Into the chain of my consciousness. If a quest of beauty's richness, eh? But this is my gradual return. Ooh. This is my gradual return. Ooh. This is my gradual return. Into the chain of my consciousness.
Are you at the point now where you feel free from the expectations? Oh, I'm Chris Whitley's daughter, and these are things I'm not. Are you free of that now? Do you feel
not totally? You know, I mean, because I'm confronted with it all. I mean, there is, in a way, you know, I do feel like, again, that was like in the beginning of the story of the Black Dub story with Lanwa. I felt so much pressure from that, you know, because that was kind of this introduction of like, oh wait, who is this girl? And like, wait, she's like 20 years old, and like, what is she doing with all these like super heavyweight, like, you know, musicians? And she's Chris Whitley's daughter. Oh, you know, like, and then there were like all these like assumptions and all
right.
this stuff, you know.
Well,
and
that's where you when you referenced the fact that he had recorded at his studio, they assumed like you
yeah,
had been
that
sitting
I had
on
like
Daniel Lanois's lap at family dinners and stuff.
And it was not that. It was not like that at all, you know. And I'm so glad that you're asking me this. You know, that it's actually the first time in a really long time that I've been able to just kind of put it into words what the real story is, you know. But you know, I mean, so the thing with my dad, I think. I mean, I probably will always kind of struggle with it, you know, because it is this like awkward thing of like, no, I didn't want to do the same. I'm not doing this to like, but at the same time, of course, I realize that it's impossible not to make the comparisons, and of course, I'm aware of that, you know, but also. You know, and I just ever like, you know, now because I don't have my first record out yet, you know.
Right.
So I am hoping that maybe by my, you know, when my record is actually out, that people will also really understand. And that's really where, because like I'm not trying to like extend his sound.
Right.
That's not what I'm here to do. You know, like what I want is to, you know, I'm interested in innovation and in music that lasts. You know, that's what I'm interested in.
I never long for no way, no group of a thousand thieves can take away the harvest or the soil where I plant my seeds. But each time I close my eyes, I find myself declined by the judgment of another day. Sitting in the silence, melody of the dark, he knows that sound is the harbor of my heart. Can only go stronger. And only grow stronger. Can only go stronger. Can only grow stronger. Wake up to the soundtrack of this chapter in our lives. I stand the palest schemes within the scenery of time. Since the day I was born, trying to make it to the river while waltzing through the storm.
whether you're selling out rooms of, like, you know, thousands of people, or, you know, hundreds of people, or, you know, whatever, there's always challenges there. And I'm just, that's where I just feel, again, like, if the music is true to, you know, then you can't really go wrong, you know.
Well, we were fortunate that you came out and shared it with our audience today, and that you're going to be sharing it in town. And if it gives you any solace, you know that you have a home here, and you come back
Thank you. You play times
and see. Now I'm going to caution you. You have to let this album live and breathe.
Oh, yeah.
Give it enough time to live and breathe before you're off to the next project in your heart and mind. You can start to fabricate it, but let this one become. And certainly we're going to be anticipating the release of the album and here to support you. I want to thank you for coming by. Trixie Whitley has joined us today on 88.5 KCN. Thanks for coming here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.